Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Welcome back to The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. My name is Sonny Bunch. I'm culture editor at The Bulwark. And I'm very pleased to be joined today by Russell Hainlein. Now, Russell, you have had an interesting few weeks. And the reason I'm having you on the show today is to discuss... Well, first, we're going to discuss Hot Frosty. Can you give folks the elevator pitch for Hot Frosty right now before we jump into a few other things? We'll come back to Hot Frosty, but I want to set the stage for folks.
Yeah, Hot Frosty, to give this sort of my best Norm MacDonald-esque delivery, is what would happen if when Frosty the Snowman came to life, he was a super hot dude?
Fair. That's exactly what the trailer is. If you watch the trailer for Hot Frosty, it's like, what if Frosty came to life and he was a guy and he was hot? Yeah. I love the concept here just because it gives me entree into a part of the industry that I have been watching and like kind of fascinated by, but haven't talked to anybody about. And that is the kind of cottage industry of Christmas specific, like Hallmark style movies. Hot Frosty comes out. This is going to go up Saturday, November 9th. Hot Frosty comes out, I think, the 12th?
11th, it comes 12th? Out Wednesday, November 13th.
Wednesday, November 13th. So it's right about to come out, and it will be your third your third Christmas movie in 2022. You were the screenwriter on In Merry Measure, 2023, the screenwriter on The Santa Summit, and now Hot Frosty, which again, it's like there's this whole industry here, and that's what I want to talk about really more than anything else is the industry, the Hallmark Christmas movie style, because this is a Netflix movie. Hot Frosty is a Netflix movie. I believe your previous two were Hallmark movies, right?
Correct, and I actually have three more Hallmark movies coming out this year.
You're like the Menkowitz of
I'll take
Christmas
that.
Hallmark movies. So let's discuss this because it is a fascinating industry, right? There's a whole thing. What was it? How did you get into this? How did you get into the like Christmas movie market?
Yeah. So I grew up loving genre pictures, you know, things, monsters, aliens, sci-fi, magic, you know, action movies, you know, guys with guns killing terrorists and, you know, kidnappers and bad dudes. Anything that, like, you could watch on cable with your brother growing up was, you know, really what sort of floated my boat. And when I moved out to LA in 2012, that's what I was writing. I'm still, you know, I still have some scripts, some projects sort of in that action martial artsy vein that I'm crossing my fingers will still get made one day. But, you know, the horror thriller stuff I tried to lean into when I got here, those are generally low budget. Hollywood makes a lot of them. You know, they tend to be received pretty well, even if they're things that go straight to video. There's talk about another sort of cottage industry is, you know, sort of the horror vein, right? So I was looking into that. I thought it would make a lot of sense. I wrote some specs. I was enjoying what I was writing for a while. Didn't get a ton of traction. I had a thriller that got made for Lifetime in, I want to say, 2018. But I just wasn't getting the traction that I wanted. And then sort of towards the tail end of 2019, right as we're starting to get towards the pandemic, My anxiety was just getting real bad. And frankly, I mean, this is a line I use a lot, but I was getting tired of coming up with creative ways of killing people. You know, it was kind of depressing to be not in a great mental space and then spend your entire day going, well, how am I going to murder people today? You know? So I forget exactly how I came to doing a Christmas thing. I want to say I must have just had a friend who said, hey, I have a friend who does Hallmark things. And I thought, sure, why not? I knew nothing about it. I watched like one or two. And I was kind of struck by how unabashedly old school they were, how they're very much sort of they're movies that are based on the chemistry of your stars in a huge way, very character driven, obviously. And I felt like, okay, this might be fun. I wrote a spec that was about sort of a boy finding a reindeer that was very much I had a rescue pit bull at the time who was a handful but was a sweetheart. And so I sort of wrote my movie based on that. And, you know, that's not really a Hallmark movie necessarily. Mm-hmm. It's just a movie, right? But I did ultimately meet a Hallmark producer, Jack Grossbart, who's made a lot of these. He liked what I had written. He said, you know, like, this is not exactly a Hallmark movie, but it's good. You can write, you know, if you're interested, I do think you could find a space here. You could do these. I tried a second spec that was in Merry Measure, and that one got made, obviously, and Jack sort of took me under his wing, introduced me to a bunch of people. Those people liked my work, and then once I did the Santa Summit, that one was really well-received, and that one sort of opened a lot of doors to do a bunch of other very cool projects that I have going this year and next year, so I didn't anticipate getting here, but I truthfully, people sometimes will ask, well, what are you going to do after you do Hallmark? You know, this is a good introduction, but what are you going to do after that? And I don't know that I want to do other stuff. Like, these are fun to make. They're really fun and rewarding to write. They're a wonderful fantasy to delve into. The people who make them are all, to this point, I have not encountered a single jerk. Like, they're all great to work with. I think when you're working with low budgets and compressed timelines, like, jerks don't last very long. I don't think, right? It would just be a lot harder to operate a business if you had divas or bad behavior going on. So the movies are fun to make and they're fun to write, and the people who make them aren't like bathed in irony, right? They're approaching it very sincerely. And I'm just kind of having a blast with it. So as long as they'll keep letting me be the Mankiewicz, I'll be their Mankiewicz. I think that'd be amazing. That'd be awesome.
Well, I mean, it's just and you mentioned a couple things there that are all worth unpacking and diving into. The first being the similarities between genre affair, like horror and that sort of stuff, and this, because there is, look, I'm not saying there is a formula to making a movie like this, but there is a kind of broad idea of, if I say to somebody, I'm going to watch a Hallmark Christmas movie, they think you're going to be watching a movie about a woman who is probably going to fall in love thanks to the power of the holidays. Like, that is the broad idea of when I say, like, a Hallmark Christmas movie, I think that's what people think. And look, I watched last night I watched The Santa Summit. Because it's hot Frosty is not out yet, sadly. I could not watch that to discuss with you, but I did want to watch one of them so we could discuss it. And The Santa Summit is like it's again, it's like there's absolutely a kind of idea, the idea of the Hallmark Christmas movie is here, but it does work beyond the formula, and there are things to play with within the formula, right?
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. I think of it as an umbrella, you know. I think maybe an even better comparison, I have mentioned this a few times too to friends and people at Hallmark, but I view Hallmark a lot like I would view something like Star Trek, right? if Star Trek is attached to a property, right, you can tell a lot of stories with Star Trek, right? You can make them funnier. You can make them more serious. You can have them be led by a variety of characters. You have an idea of what a Star Trek thing will be, but you can also play within the world of the Star Trek sort of universe. You can do a Star Trek comedy. I'm sure if they wanted to do more of a sort of horror-y Star Trek, you could do that. But you get the sense that you're going to get, like, aliens, you're going to get spaceships, right? You're gonna have things that we expect and we love under this umbrella. And so Hallmark, I think, is great in that respect, right? You know you're going to get Christmas, you know you're going to get love, right? You know you'll get, you know, some degree of holiday traditions. You know you're going to get, to some extent, that warm, cozy feeling, right, that you expect in something like this. But then within that, you can really play. You know, in years past, when a lot of the sort of the tropes that have become memeified online about Hallmark movies sort of came to be, you know, I think they were, I wasn't around, so I guess I don't want to speak for them, but I get the sense that there was more of a template that people liked and people wanted to stick to a little more. You could play a bit, but not much. Whereas something like Santa Summit, I mean, for the people who haven't seen it, it's basically like SantaCon, the mm-hmm. Hallmark movie, yeah. right? And the crazy thing, which maybe doesn't sound crazy to people who aren't familiar with Hallmark movies, but one of the crazy things about it is our romantic leads meet for one scene at the beginning, and they do not meet again until the end. Right. It is a movie that is very I feel like that's a very old school Hollywood idea of you meet somebody, you fall in love in the very first scene, and then you don't need to spend more time with them. The audience understands implicitly like that they are in love. And in a lot of these movies, you need to see it over time, right? It takes place over a few weeks mm-hmm. Leading up to Christmas. This is sort of a one crazy night movie. So we didn't have that luxury. But this is the sort of thing I don't think they would have made a few years ago. They're trying to branch out with that umbrella, right? Like they're trying to play with all the colors of what might be on the Hallmark paint palette, right? And I'm very fortunate that I've come to Hallmark at a time when they're continuing to sort of try new things within reason, you know?
Yeah.
No, it is interesting. It's so funny that you mentioned SantaCon because as I was watching the Santa Summit, I thought to myself, well, this feels a lot like SantaCon. And then I started thinking, like, you know, there is space for, like, there's an R-rated raunch-com version of this movie that is set totally. At SantaCon.
Totally.
But they would never, yes. you would never, that movie would never get made now. It would be hard to make, I'll put it, it would be hard to make that movie now because, you know, if you try and put comedies in theaters, people, it's hard to market, you know, comedies don't sell, blah, blah, blah. And this stuff is huge business, not just for Hallmark, but also Netflix, right? I mean, I joke with people that the secret weapon in the Netflix arsenal is the low budget, $90 to $110 minute movie aimed at women. Like that's like their real bread and butter. You know, everybody focuses on the $200 million Dwayne Johnson movie or whatever, but like sure. that's like what yeah, yeah. that's what is actually soaking up, you know, a disproportionate share of eyeballs to budget. Do you think that, I'm sorry, this is a long way to get to my question here. Do you think that the increased competition from Netflix in this sector is giving Hallmark kind of reason to push the boundaries a little bit with what they consider to be a Hallmark Christmas movie?
I do think that the more people try to do, like, there are other avenues, you know, like, there's that Great American Channel, you know, there's, like, I think Tubi tries to do some of them, like, Roku Channel is doing some, like, I think E has tried to mm-hmm. do it, like, Fox Nation has talked about it, like, there's a lot of places see the dollar signs and go, oh, let's do this, but I think they're trying to do things that feel very old school at this point, things that feel maybe a bit more like familiar tropes. And I do think there's probably something to the notion of, well, if we keep doing the same thing and now everyone else is doing the same thing, even though we've built up this brand and a brand loyalty, if we just keep giving them the same thing over and over again, at what point do they go, all right, we get it? You know, like I think about, this is so unfair. I'm going to name one of my favorite bands growing up. This is such an unfair diss on them that I don't mean. If they ever listen to this, I love you guys. But like the band Everclear, right? Sure. From like the late 90s, mid 90s. I feel like they had a couple of albums in there, like So Much for the Afterglow and like Songs from an American Movie, like all of these things that I loved so much. And then they came out with like another album later on that sounded very similar to all the other albums they'd done. And I was kind of like, I mean, they're still doing their thing, but I feel like they're giving the audience what they think the audience wants, but I can just listen to the old albums. You know, right. Like, so I know for a fact, I've been in meetings with Hallmark where I've pitched something that might have been a bit more old school, and they've said, these are things we've done before. Let's try to do something slightly different. You know, they're cognizant, they're aware. And I don't know if that's specifically due to competition or whether it's due to just not wanting to play the hits over and over and over again. You know, part of maintaining brand strength is showing the audience that we're not just going to give you the same, like, I'm not going to name, for the purposes of my career, I'm not going to name things, but people might understand that, you know, there are places that, you know, fill the trough with slop, right?
Yeah.
There are, those accusations have been lobbed at certain makers of movies. And Hallmark makes a lot of movies. I think it would be very easy for them to put slop in the trough, but they also know that people will get tired if that's the case. So then how do we dress it up a little bit? How do we change what we're doing? How do we elevate it some? And again, Santa Summit was a great example of that. There was like a Pleasantville-style movie that they did last year called Where Are You Christmas, where stylistically it had like a black and white world where people came into color. There was Catch Me If You Claws, which first of all is a great title. And second of all, was like a sort of heist style movie. I'm working on some things for 2025 that are very different. One of the movies I have this year, The Santa Class, is a big, broad ensemble comedy with some magic realism in it. I mean, there's a lot of stuff you can do as long as it's at Christmas, we've got a love story, we've got some holiday traditions, we've got a bit of that warm, cozy feeling. As long as you can do that, there's such a world you can play with in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. How does the actual pitch process work? I mean, do you just go to the folks at Hallmark and you're like, all right, here are five ideas, which do you like best? You know, I think you mentioned that that In Merry Measure was a spec. You wrote that and they bought it. But I get the sense that you just go in now and you say, well, what about this?
It varies. It varies wildly from project to project. You know, I've had ones where I've already had it written and given it to them. Hot Frosty was another one that was a spec. I have gone in with ideas and that's worked. There have been sort of open writing assignments where they have a broad idea for like, well, what kind of world, we know the world, but like, we don't know who the characters are, what the story is. And so then I pitch that and then they like that. I have come on to rewrite a project or two, or come on to, you know, help with a project. Like Three Wiser Men and a Boy is one of the big movies this year on Hallmark. And I was very fortunate to get to work on that. So at this point, hopefully, I think I've built up enough goodwill that I can continue to get work sort of in a variety of ways. I can bring them things. I can bring them finished products. They can come to me with things. But ultimately, I think they have a pretty good idea of what they want when they hear it. I always try to pitch the weirdest things I have and see what I can get away with. You know, I think Santa Summit was a great example of that. I just didn't think necessarily that they were going to go for something that's more about a group of friends than about the love story. I think Santa Class is a good example of that this year. That one's got some ideas in it that are very out there for Hallmark, I think. But they've been game. I mean, again, I think they know that they know what's going on. They know what will get some eyeballs. They know what audiences like, and also they're willing to try new things within reason. I mean, I think they want to expand what a Hallmark movie can be within reason. I just saw there was a movie on their streaming platform, The Groomsman Second Chances, which is the elevator pitch is it's the gay My Best Friend's Wedding, which is a great idea. It's a great idea, right? And it was so fun and so charming. I mean, like, I really hope it did well. I don't know what the numbers were or anything, but they're willing to play, man. It's cool.
Yeah.
It's been really cool.
Do you get feedback? I mean, all these streaming companies play everything very close to the chest in terms of numbers and, you know, what data comes out, et cetera, et cetera. But, like, what sort of feedback do you get from the fans? Because I do feel like there's a real... You know, it's funny. I was trying to figure out which one of these I would watch, and you know, I was looking at the IMDb scores, and like they're fine, but like the number of ratings is relatively low compared to like the horror movies or the action movies or whatever that you even like the straight to video stuff. So like that's not where this audience is, but this audience is big, and my understanding is fairly vocal in terms of what they like. You know, it's like a real community. Do you hear from them? What's the feedback like?
Yeah, I mean, another comparison to Star Trek, right? I mean, like, the fans are incredibly vocal. The fans are widespread. The fans, you know, I think there's a larger question that we can talk about, you know, after I answer this, where it's like how Hallmark operates. You brought up Mankiewicz. How Hallmark really does sort of operate as a very old school studio system.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there are faces of the franchise, you know, and again, the fans love, love, love these people. These might be people that your listeners wouldn't know from Adam, right? But like, there are a huge number of people who would pay good money at a convention to go and take a picture with this person and tell them how much the movies mean to them. Right now, there's a Hallmark Christmas cruise that is going on. That, again, fans get the opportunity to go on a cruise with a lot of Christmas-related activities that a bunch of their favorite stars are taking part in and doing, you know, sort of activities and talkbacks and things like this. So I think the fans are all out there. They aren't really on IMDb and Letterboxd as much as, you know, they are on, like, Instagram. Certainly they're very, very vocal on Instagram. I like to keep my finger on the pulse the best I can on places like Twitter and on Reddit and wherever else. They will let you know if they don't like your movie.
Yeah.
They definitely will say, I've learned a lot of things from them. One of the, I read a Reddit post a couple of months ago that really made me think differently about some of the things that you do narratively when making a low budget character driven 83 minute movie. This, I believe it was a woman, had said, you know, recently they had lost a loved one. And so are there any Christmas movies that she could watch to feel better that don't evoke the death of someone close to a main character? And I kind of went, well, shit. you know, yeah. I think that when you're trying to make movies set around a holiday that is very family-oriented – and there are a lot of different characters in them. One of the main natural questions would be like, well, where's your family? What is your family doing at this? And you can't have 20 characters. You can't have like everybody's extended family and everybody's parents and they're all involved and whatever. Just from a narrative perspective, that's really going to clutter up what you're trying to accomplish. And so one of the shortcuts is to just kill them off, right? Just yeah. kill off a mom and be like, yeah, well, mom died a while back. Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. Right. And then we don't have to worry about that. We don't have to pay an actor to be the mom. Right. Like, there's a lot of benefit to that. But also, you don't need to explain why your mom's not there. Like, yeah, I don't. Yeah. There are so many different types of families out there that are a variety of combinations of human beings that don't require death to explain the absence of them. And so now at this point, like, unless it's a character who is specifically dealing with the loss of a loved one, like Hot Frosty is an example of this, certainly. But, like, I'm not going to kill off parents, you know, anymore, really, unless I have to, unless it's important to the character. I'm not going to do it just to get rid of mom so that we don't need a mom in the narrative, right?
Yeah.
That's fan feedback that I found really informative. I was like, oh, that's a lazy shortcut that I'm taking that is detracting from somebody's potential enjoyment of something that should give them warm, cozy feelings, right? Like, so I don't know. I think there's a lot to learn from them. You also have to just have a very thick skin, which I try to do. I think the fans are cool. I think they're intense, but in a really good way. And again, they're a big reason why I get to keep doing this.
Yeah. No, the idea of a Hallmark con sort of thing is like, I can't believe I had never thought of it before now, but like, that is actually the 100%, like, you know, I Lacey Chabert, I guess, would be like the William Shatner of
for sure.
Hallmark con.
But like Lacey, but Lacey's somebody that you know. You know, like, you know Lacey from things.
Right.
You know, Tyler Hines, who is a friend of mine at this point, is like the Brad Pitt of Hallmark movies. You know, I'm sure he would find that comparison very flat. I hope he doesn't hear this, because then I'm complimenting him. He's a great guy. He's very smart. And he's great, great, great with fans. And his movies all do very well. But he will... Hey, I'll have fans lined up for hours to talk to him and share their stories about what his movies meant to, like, you know, loved ones or to the people in question, to take photos, to, you know, do whatever. And I think he's really smart in understanding the value of cultivating that, you know, fan relationship. Making fans feel appreciated. I mean, I certainly try to emulate that the best I can. Nobody wants to take pictures with a writer, but like, when people reach out and say how much the movie means to them, I try my best to respond and say, thank you so much. That means a lot to me, because it does. And the fans should hear that. They should know that, you know, within reason, the things that they share are being heard and are being really appreciated.
Yeah. No, I know people in the horror convention business. I think this has to happen. There has to be Hallmark Con. This is not,
there are many of them. They exist.
Okay, good.
Oh yeah,
No, the
for sure.
The that's great.
We talked a little bit about, like, the things, you know, the things that have to be in these movies. You know, like, general holiday spirit. You know,
Santa shows up at some point, probably, in some guise or another, you know, of whatever. But the is there anything that you can't do? Is there anything that is like, we can't touch this? This is a thing we're not getting into. Like, we know the positives. What are like the like no-go zones?
I mean, they're G-rated movies, right? Mm. So I think that answers the bulk of it, yeah. Right? Like. You can get away with anything that would be in a G-rated movie. Okay. And if it can't be rated G, then you can't do it. But again, SantaCon, they're drinking. When I did my thriller for Lifetime in like 2018, 2019, whatever it was, one of the scenes was they're all at a party and, you know, one or two of the people have had a little too much to drink. That's what it was in the script. And I was told very explicitly, you cannot insinuate that these people are drinking. And I was like, but it's a house party and they're all what are they doing? And they were like, you can have them drinking from red Solo cups that we can't see inside. And as long as nobody is acting flagrantly drunk, then whatever conclusions people want to reach, then they can do that, right? Like, that doesn't exist really anymore, or at least not within Hallmark's world. I'm sure in other places those rules kind of exist, but I was very thrilled that we could do the SantaCon movie and people could have drinks. Again, within reason, they're not getting drunk in the movie, because if they're getting drunk, it's not TVG at that point, right?
Yeah.
So I can't think of anything that I've been told you cannot do this other than like things that you would expect, right? Like the things that are trying to push it closer to PG, and then they go, all right, come on. You know, like stuff like this.
Come on, guy.
No, that's so funny. Do you go when they're shooting these? Do you go to set and help with the like on set? You know, rewrites or is there anything like that, or is it just like here's our we have 10 days to shoot this thing. We're gonna get it done. You know, we don't have time for rewrites and monkeying around.
Yeah, I it's a little of both. I do try to go to set, just because, you know, I have the privilege that I can afford the time and the plane fare and whatever to get there. They're not flying writers out for Hallmark movies. I think maybe to your point, right? They're very fast productions. There aren't these movies where, it's not being shot on a green screen and they're like, well, we'll figure it all out later. Like, you need to have everything figured out to the T in order to make these movies shoot as efficiently as they can. And obviously the actors will do some alts on the day, and certainly there will be some changes that are, you know, necessary to production or necessary for budget reasons or what have you. I'm at the point now where I'd like to think that they know they can consult me on those things. Instead of doing them unilaterally, because they trust me, they know I can do good work pretty quickly and think on my feet in those scenarios. But when I go to set, it's mostly as a visitor and as somebody who's there to shake hands. And I do help with problems that arise when I'm there, but it's not really in a professional capacity. It's more in a, I'm here anyway, you need something, I can help. And, you know, I love that. I love that. I think the movies shockingly work out a lot better when the writers get to handle writer problems. You know, I think that that's something that I continue to push for as much as I can, like to get people to trust me, new people that I haven't worked with before. You know, I'm not a diva. I'm not overly precious. I'm somebody who is very solutions oriented, and I understand some of the limitations of budget and time. But I still think that I can come up with the best solution to a lot of these problems a lot of the time. Not all the time, but a lot of the time. I love going to set, though. It's really cool to see these things come to life. I just, even when it's frantic and they're shooting very quickly, but like, you get to go to Canada in summer and watch them transform a location into winter. I mean, it's very, very cool. I'm not jaded enough yet to the point where that's not cool to me.
Yeah. I assume that most of this stuff is shot up in, you know, Vancouver or wherever else in, you know, Hollywood up north.
Correct. A lot of the things are shot up there. You'll find projects that are shot around specific locations. Like, one of the big movies last year was a Biltmore Christmas set at the Biltmore in Asheville. I think it's Asheville. Isn't that Asheville? I think it's Asheville. The Biltmore Estate, but very scenic. And this movie looks gorgeous. I mean, it looks great. It's very sweeping. They'll do movies that are set like specifically in like Ireland. I think that's this weekend that there's one that's called like "Tis the Season to Be Irish," or it's something along those lines that is set in a location. But if it's not something that's set like somewhere specific, then yeah, I'd say most of the time it's probably being shot in Canada.
Yeah, yeah. The Biltmore is in North Carolina.
Some
flooding damage there. Sadly, we just was just googling it, but you know,
a bummer. Yeah. It's a very cool looking. I mean, that movie. And if any viewers want to like have an entry level, like, well, what's an example of like what a good Hallmark Christmas movie looks like, without being like totally self congratulatory and picking one of mine, A Biltmore Christmas feels again like sort of an old Hollywood style premise and setup and execution. And the stars are great, and it's got this very cool location, and it feels a little more sweeping in scope. Some of these, obviously, due to budgetary things, can feel a little smaller. This one feels big, like the location it's being filmed at. It's a really, really good one.
Yeah.
So let's discuss Hot Frosty a little bit. You went to the friends and family screening last night. That was just how did it play with an audience? How did it go with the people in attendance?
I mean, it was great. I will never forget. I won't name the person because I don't know if they want to be named, but it's the spouse of one of the actors was sitting next to me and was crying profusely towards the end of the movie, and being at somewhere, and also the spouse was an actor also in their own right, who I respect the work of, and so getting to sit there and like listening to somebody who you don't know crying at something that you wrote is pretty cool. I mean, it's just pretty neat. Yeah, the laughs play. I mean, you've got like Craig Robinson and Joe Latrulio in there. I mean, like, they are so funny. I think Lacey does terrific work. Like, you know, I don't think there are a lot of people that can maintain the tone of this sort of thing the way that she can. And then Dustin playing the titular Hot Frosty. I got to see him work on set, and, you know, I don't want to like overstate it. Maybe
oversell it. You don't want to oversell
it.
You don't want to get people. You don't want to get people too excited.
I'm sleep deprived to the listeners. I apologize. Normally a writer is sharper than this, but I watched him approach playing this snowman with like the seriousness of like Keaton or Chaplin, or like, you know, he was so intentional about, well, if I just came to life for the first time, how would I move? How would I speak? What like rhythms would I use when I'm like searching for a word that maybe I've never said before, when I see something for the first time? You know, like he just had all of these great, he was asking all the right questions. And it's the hardest role in the movie by a lot, because the movie doesn't work if the snowman doesn't work, just period. And I think he does really endearing and funny and special work here. I just couldn't be more thrilled with the cast. And again, getting to hear people laugh, getting to see my name on a big screen for the first time in my career was a really special moment.
Yeah, and I will say, like, the cast is pretty great. Lauren Holly is in this. You know, Lacey Chabert, obviously. Katie Mixon Greer, who, you know, love from Eastbound and Down and all the, all those things. You know, she's very funny. This is it's a very good cast.
Yeah, Lauren Holly playing Jane Miller, which is my grandmother's name. I think you could see in the trailer like the gist of what Lauren Holly is doing in this movie, but she gets to have a lot of fun. She's very, very funny in her scenes. She's got like one big scene that really brings the house down, and she's so funny in it. And Katie is like the sweetest person in the world, and is very, very funny and sharp, and honestly, I wish there was like a 110-minute version of this where we could get even more of her character and more of, you know, all the supporting cast who all say so many funny things. I mean, you could also just watch Craig and Joe riff forever, right? Like, they help make your script seem a lot smarter and funnier than it is when you have people like Craig and Joe delivering it, you know? So it was just very, very cool. I'm very excited for people to see it. I think it'll defy maybe what some people think it'll be. I think a lot of people will come into it thinking this is a one-note joke movie, and I think we worked really hard to give it like heart and sincerity and not make it this sort of you know, Sharknado-y, you know, riddled with irony thing. We wanted it to be real characters that an audience would like, but we also didn't want it to be purely like the romance novel version of it. We wanted to play with what makes all of the inherent comedy of the premise. Again, I wrote it on spec. I didn't pitch it sort of specifically for that reason. I wrote it just for me. I wrote the version of it that I thought would be best, that would sort of toe that line. And I didn't think anyone would ever make it. And here we are a few years later. And after a few champions at like Muse and Netflix, it's come to life. And the trailer blew up on Twitter in a really cool and satisfying way. And now I'm sitting here talking to people. I'm talking to you about it. 3 years ago, I was pitching it to my friends just to make them laugh at parties. And now I'm talking to people about it. It's just the coolest thing.
Yeah. Well, Hot Frosty, again, it's Wednesday, November 13th. It's going to be on Netflix. It'll be right there on your homepage, I'm sure. It'll be, you know, somewhere in that prime real estate, you know, the hottest marketing space in Hollywood, really.
Yeah. We're going to go for number one opening week, maybe. I don't know how do they measure that?
There are two distinct I've talked to a lot of people about Netflix's various, you know, there are two distinct things, right? There's like their top 10, there's their daily top 10, which they put the finger on a little bit, like there's some algorithmic, you know, whatever. But then there's just like the pure numbers that are released at their, you know, their data hub. Every week, and that is, I think, slightly different. So we'll see how it does. I'm sure everyone's curious, over there as well to see.
That comes out the 13th. And can I shamelessly plug my other Hallmark things?
Yes.
So Three Wiser Men and a Boy, which is the sequel to 2022's Three Wise Men and a Baby, that comes out on November 23rd. That one I have seen and I think is really funny, very comedy forward. You know, the family members of this boy, the father and the father's brothers, wreck this kid's Christmas pageant, and then they have to take over while their mom is like started seeing somebody new that they don't care for that either. You know, so there's a very straightforward comedy stuff, good family vibes. November 27th on Hallmark Mystery, which this is not a mystery, but it's they air some of their more old school style movies there over the holiday season, and this one's called Christmas Under the Lights. It stars Heather Hemmings and Marco Grazzini, and it's a little more of an old school movie for me. It was something that I came upon when they asked me if I wanted to do something a little more tugging at the old heartstrings, which is not really something that I had done yet in my career, and I was a little scared of it, and that's kind of why I did it, and I think it works pretty well. It's certainly the emotional stuff. If you want something that's like a good cry, a good sort of the complicated relationship between mothers and daughters, especially once the mother is gone, what we do in those situations, how we deal with the legacy that we inherit, even if it's not a legacy that we're necessarily crazy about. There's some cool stuff in there, and it's a little more I don't want to say melodrama. There are laughs too, but it's less of a raucous comedy than the others. And then December 14th on Hallmark Channel is The Santa Class, and that one stars Kimberly Sustat, Ben Ayers, and a bunch of hilarious improv comics from Canada. And it takes place at a school for shopping mall Santas, where they learn how to be good shopping mall Santas, and on the way to the first day, they encounter a Santa with amnesia, and they bring him along, and sure enough, they realize that he is, in fact, the real Santa, and so they want to show him the way to how to be Santa again before Christmas, while also sort of competing with the rival rich kid Santa school, while we're the sort of misfit Santa school. So there's a bit of kind of 80s vibe to it. Yeah. It's very ensemble, very comedy forward. That one I also think could be really special. So yeah, four movies this year, feeling very blessed and honored, and it's very gratifying, very cool. Yeah.
I always like to close these interviews by asking if there's anything I should have asked, if you think there's anything folks should know about. I mean, that is a healthy lineup of of holiday content. But if there's anything else you think folks should know about, what should we have discussed?
Yeah, I think I think it's really easy to underestimate what Hallmark has done and is doing. But in a time when I feel like a lot of film Twitter discourse revolves around the idea of, well, there aren't movie stars anymore. You know, here is a studio that functions the way a studio functioned back in the day, right? When you were going to watch a Warner Brothers movie, you knew that, like, you'd see Jimmy Cagney or Lauren Bacall or whomever, Betty Davis. You know, you had these names that were attached, the faces of the franchise, right? You knew what you were going to get when you would see something. And what Hallmark has done, and how did they do that back in the day, right? They made a ton of movies. They made a ton of movies. Not a bunch of them were $100 million budget, right? They were lower budget things, character-driven things, comedies, romances, melodramas. Stars were born because they would play like the best friend, and then enough people liked them that then they got their own shot. And if their own shot worked, then they kept going, and you could try new things. And if those things work, you keep doing them. And if they don't, then you don't. You can afford that when the movies aren't all, you know, $75 million, $200 million budgets. So they're doing things the right way. I mean, they're doing things the way that I think we as movie fans would like to see the big studios trying to do, right? Build up some star power, make more movies that are character driven. You don't need everything to be CGI laden. You don't need everything to be, you know, a massive spectacle where aliens come out of a giant, you know, hole in the sky, right? We don't need that all the time. I think that Hallmark will continue to sustain because they can keep just they can do cruises where there's 20 people that are stars that everyone will watch whatever they put on TV because they've built this thing. And I think Netflix is also trying, you brought up, right, doing lower budget things. Also think they do some of those, they do some like DTV action style movies a lot as well, right? Like,
right.
There's just so much you can do to help not just like your corner of the industry, but just to find ways of sustaining at a time when fewer and fewer people seem to want to watch movies and we're looking for answers on how to get audiences invested. I think they're doing it the right way. Like, I think that they're doing it. And whether you think the product is good or not, you know, is obviously up for debate. Like, all I can do is try to make my next movie better than the last one to the degree that a screenwriter can control it, right? But, like, when you get a lot of swings of the bat because you're making a bunch of movies and you're telling a bunch of different stories and you're giving a bunch of stars the opportunity to build that star power and you're reinforcing the brand by continuing to try new things and expand what your sandbox is. Like, that's something that shouldn't be underestimated. And I think that some of the bigger studios run by people who do very questionable things, like taking a star of many decades and only airing his movie for 1 week in cinemas, even though it's a really good movie, like, there's no long-term vision in that. You know, you have to have some degree of long-term vision for your brand and how to tell stories within it that resonate with an audience. And I do think that Hallmark is doing that. I think Netflix is, in certainly in the corners of Netflix that I have worked within, they are trying to do that. And I think there's a lot of wisdom to it.
Yeah.
Russell, thank you for being on the show today.
This is great. And I hope folks, I'm just going to run through these again. Again, it's, we've got Hot Frosty coming out on Netflix. And then over at Hallmark, we've got Three Wiser Men and a Baby, The Santa Class, and Christmas Under the Lights. So there's a whole, there's everything else that, you know, the Hallmark channel kind of turns into, you know, Christmas movies 24 hours a day over there this time
of
year. So
the Santa Summit airs with some regularity also. I mean, if you want to check that out, I really like how that one turned out. And again, Amy, who played sort of the nerdy friend in Santa Summit, she got to be the lead in a movie this year, right? Hunter King, who is the lead in Santa Summit, is the lead in what might be the biggest movie that they're doing this year, right? Like, when movies do well, you keep seeing, well, the audience clearly likes these people. Let's keep doing the things. And hopefully, if the audience keeps liking the writer, then they'll keep bringing the writer back, because that also matters.
Writers matter. Writers matter, folks. One of the things I love about my show is having writers on, because, you know, they don't get enough chances to tell their sides of the story here. So
yeah, when the movie's bad, the first thing in a review is, well, the script was bad. And when the movie is good, very rarely is the script brought up, which doesn't feel right, especially given that, you know, The writer starts at the very bottom of the food chain, and then everybody else. I started when I kept writing things online about movies after I started making them, and I started realizing the extent to which whenever I would watch a movie and go, God, that script sucked, that it almost certainly was not the script at all. It was probably a great script. And then a bunch of, like, you know, suits with Sharpies and a bunch of, you know, people along the way were like, don't care for this. Maybe we do this instead. Let me change this without telling him. Let me do whatever. Yeah. Right. Like, those sorts of things happen all the time. Whenever somebody gets hired for something and everyone goes like, how is this guy getting hired when he wrote – who were the guys that wrote, like, Gods of Egypt and, like – you know what I mean? There was – And they were on something that was, like, quote-unquote bad, whatever it was. I don't remember what it was. Maybe it was bad. I don't remember. But there were all these people on Twitter going, well, what do you expect from the writers of this? And I wanted to be like, well, they keep getting hired because they're probably good writers. Like, yeah. It's probably not them. It's when you make a movie that's $100 million, there are so many chefs in the kitchen. Like,
The writers aren't shooting the movie. Come on.
The writer is not even the chef in the kitchen. The writer is like the little circular window that for the doors that push in and out in every like episode of Frasier that takes place in a kitchen. I'm peeking in with my eyes, you know, going side to side, going, what's going on in there? As, you know, Frasier and Niles are burning the, you know, the food, and Roz is, you know, spraying, you know, Martin with whatever, you know, like that's what ends up happening to writers a lot of the time. But again, very, very fortunately, that does not happen, or has not, knock on wood, happened to me very much. In the Hallmark world, or certainly in this, in Hot Frosty. I mean, Hot Frosty is very much the script that I wrote in a lot of ways, in many, many ways. So that's very, very cool when it happens that way. It's super cool.
Yeah. Russell, thank you for being on the show today. This was great.
Thanks, Sonny. Thank you for having me. And, I hope everybody enjoys the Christmas movies this year, man.
Yeah. All right. And again, the Hallmark Channel, Netflix, they'll be all over. Check them out. So, Russell, thank you for being on the show. Again, my name is Sonny Bunch. I'm culture editor at The Bulwark, and I'll be back next week with another episode of The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. We'll see you guys then.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holiday install to get started. Lowe's, we help you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets, with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.